From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for May 20th, 2022. Your brew crew is in town with the Washington Nationals this weekend, and today is National Be a Millionaire Day. Great. The day's almost over now, they tell me. Well, the following is definitely not a third world problem. A man put his Tesla in the summon mode. That's where the car comes to you instead of you going to fetch it. So from his private jet, he summoned his Tesla. It worked well until it didn't. The Tesla crashed into his waiting $2 million private jet. Wow, Tesla owners are never going to get in their daily steps. Shotsky's is a great up north Wisconsin bar in Eagle River, and they're out to set a new world record. They're going to line up 1,400 people with 1,400 shots on linked up skis. Then they'll all knock back 1,400 shots simultaneously for the world record. Remember, the bar is literally called Shotsky's. Talk about Wisconsin proud. At a Metallica concert in Brazil, a woman who was 39 weeks pregnant went into labor and gave birth to a baby boy. Apparently, the infant wasn't a Metallica fan because he just wanted out. A couple in India are suing their son and daughter-in-law for not giving them grandchildren. The parents claim they spent $250,000 raising their son. Now they want their money back, plus $400,000 in damages. I'd like to announce we have a winner for the In-Laws from Hell trophy. And finally, one of the most famous car chases in history was O.J. Simpson's. But we have a new winner. In Australia, cops in a high-speed chase couldn't believe what they witnessed. The couple in the speeding car were having sex while the cops were in hot pursuit. The couple's thinking was, they're going to jail, and this would be the last time they can have sex for some time. Obviously, they've never been in prison. On the podcast today, we have Brian Kilb, Kendall Bauer, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up a tough week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks, Max. Not only a tough week, but tough to follow that open, as always. The NASDAQ down 3.8%, the S&P down 3% this week, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 2.9%, closing at the bell today at 31,261. It appeared for a while that the S&P would enter bear market territory. It did climb back to positive for the day, but obviously a rough week overall. For the year, the NASDAQ now down 27.2%. The S&P, when you include dividends, now down 17.7% for the year, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 13.3%. A quick look at stock markets, just a brief look at bonds. The yield on the benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury closed the week at 279, down fairly significantly this week. I think in a sign that perhaps we're finally starting to see bonds behave, even as stocks have now decided to maybe take the lead in the race to the bottom here. So, Brian, maybe a good place to start. Some positive signs from our bond funds, even as stocks continue to be the piece that causes headaches.
Well, first of all, let's state the obvious. It was a tough week when Max is ending the week with prison jokes, you know. I had a nice little rally at the close today. And as you said, Kyle, you know, for all the discussion about how difficult a year it's been for stocks, it's been an even more difficult year for bonds. And I don't know, was it surprising? I don't know that yields dropped a little bit this week in a pretty good week for bonds, you know, and to the degree you've kind of taken some risk out of your portfolio over the last few months, what's going on now, you're rewarded for it a little bit by smoothing out the ride. And you know, now yields are dropping a little bit. That makes your return in the bond market look a little bit better. Maybe hopefully gives you a little better sense for the role that bonds play in your portfolio. But I like to kind of see the buying on the dip at the end of the day. I think we're going to see a lot of that. You know, I think prices right now are in a place where, you know, stocks kind of look like they're valued pretty fairly. Maybe we take a little bit more momentum on the Dow side and we actually get excited about buying a little bit. You know, there's a phrase we haven't used in a while. So not all bad to this nonsense. You know, some of it actually is to be expected, and some of it actually, I think, is cleansing and good for the market in the long run. So, you know, we'll see where we go from here. But not all of this is bad. So.
Yeah, and Brian, you and I were talking a bit before the show just about how it's maybe not the way we want to get to where we are, but in many ways, where we are right now is where we thought we should have been, and we've taken a very different path to that. You know, coming from a place where post-pandemic, we probably recovered a lot more than we should have, a lot more quickly than we should have. We saw valuations get pretty significantly stretched. Stocks get fairly expensive, and all of a sudden we're back to a place now where, you know, as you point out, stocks are about fairly valued now. If we really believe that earnings will grow, you know, maybe to $2.35 per share over the next 12 months on the S&P 500, you know, that puts the forward PE of the S&P 500 at 16.6, which again, right around that long-term average. And so I think, you know, if anything, that's an encouraging sign. And then the reminder for investors that if you look at where we were, the high for the S&P 500 prior to COVID, you're still up more than 15% on your stock money since that pre-COVID peak. And so it's been a very weird way. You know, it's not a straight line. And I think investors certainly have been whipsawed quite a bit by the last couple of years. But, you know, I think we'd still be pretty happy with the number, if not the way we got there.
You know, I keep thinking this and saying this often enough to clients. If you go back a year, you know, we were doing pretty well, you know, and I don't know that a lot of it made any sense. You know, we had gotten to a point where valuations were stretched and things probably got a little ahead of themselves. And I don't like it when things don't make sense. Well, so now, you know, a lot of the stuff makes sense to me. A lot of what's going on is exactly what should be going on. And the drivers for the bad performance, at least, you know, valuations coming back, interest rates rising and such, all things make complete sense to me. So now I kind of like the fact that it makes sense to me. Of course, I don't like the results. You know, so what you kind of hope from here on out is things settle in. You know, I think there's a lot of good news in to put a floor under the markets right now. We start to gain back some momentum, and then you're going to feel good and it's going to make sense. And that's always the best place for all of us, I think. So,
Brian, how often does that happen that it makes sense? I mean, over the long term, you probably can feel that. But I mean, moment to moment, week to week.
Yeah, I think in the bigger scheme of things, you can feel comfortable where the markets are. You know, I think on a day-to-day basis, I think everybody at this table that's done this for years and years now would say, like, most days don't make any sense. You know, I read a lot of articles, and it's like the headline says, well, this is what happened today. And I'm like, really? Do we really think that's what happened? I think a lot of times the articles explain the market, not the markets explaining the articles, you know. But I do think, you know, I don't have a sense of where the bottom or the top is, or I don't have a sense of where inflection points are. I do have a very strong sense of where things should be. And I think in the long run, things migrate to that place where it makes sense and where it should be. You know, on a day-to-day basis, how often are we there? Probably not that often. You know, so which is kind of the fun in it all. You know, so
Kendall, I think, you know, separating this idea, the big picture that, you know, I think Brian's talking about long-term, where we think we're supposed to be versus kind of short-term, maybe not always understanding what's the current driver. I think it really gets to a point that you and I talked about, and you and I have talked about a number of times, and that is, you know, it falls back on this, the importance of having a plan, right? It falls back on this idea that, you know, if we're going to go through periods where some things don't make sense, you need something to fall back on that does make sense, that helps you refocus on that bigger picture.
Yeah, you know, I think you got to have a set of rules or guidelines when we go through downswings like this to turn to. You know, something to look at and say, here's why my portfolio is structured the way it is, and for these reasons. And it's a good time to talk with your advisor or to look, you know, ask yourself, am I okay with my stock being at this percent? Is my risk tolerance the same as it was a year ago when the markets were doing great? And I think it's perfectly natural that we get this instinct to want to jump away when the markets dive down. You know, just a short story, my wife and I moved into a new house and we're still trying to figure out some of that layout. And so there's these blind spots where she'll be coming out of one room, I'll be going in another. And I'm notoriously jumpy. So, you know, the other morning she's coming out, bedroom, I'm walking by. cross at that perfect moment, and I jump. You know, she thinks it's funny, and we go on our merry way. But I think that's the same feeling investors can get when the markets, you know, start to head south. And again, I think it's a natural response. But if you have something to go back to, a set of rules, guidelines, a plan, you can look at it and say, okay, you know, I stuck with it during the good years. I'm going to stick with it now, and chances are I'm going to end up, you know, okay. You know, in the long run, I think when you let emotion dictate trying to rebalance or trying to jump in and out, it may feel good in the short term. You may get a relief from jumping out of the markets. But 5, 10, 15 years from now, you may look back at that and, you know, realize that it wasn't a great move.
I think what I always take away from this is there's this tendency to fall back on these animal instincts, right? There's this tendency to go back to our roots of, you know, running away or sticking to fight around those things that scare us. And those are your two choices, really. And I think having that plan makes it easier to stick it out, right? Having that plan makes it easier, you know, as Brian was talking about, to get past the things that don't make sense into the things that do. And that's what we're dealing with right now is, okay, short term, there's some issues, and longer term, you know, I think there's some opportunities that are starting to emerge.
There's always, you know, there's just a few simple things we've talked to each other for years and years and years about, but, you know, stocks being the only market where prices go up, people buy more, and prices go down and people sell, you know. And if you understand why that happens, you understand why most people are miserable at doing this, you know, because really, you know, you're driven by fear on the one side and greed on the other, and there's our emotional reaction. So to your point, you know, Kendall, you need to have something objective, you know, you need to have metrics, you need to have, you know, rules along the way that when it becomes emotionally challenging, that, you know, you're not using your ticker, you know, you're using some base metric to go, oh yeah, this is time to do this, you know, because otherwise you will, you know. I mean, if you're afraid right now, you know, and markets are reasonably priced, and you wait to buy when they're even cheaper, you're going to be even more afraid. You know, so like, it's like, what's the point? You know, you need to know in your mind now that there's a place where I'm going to be interested in buying. And to some degree, who cares how you get there, and who cares what the timing is? You know, what you care about is buying cheap and selling expensive, you know, and those rules that you want to lay down for yourself are should be, you know, geared toward reinforcing those good behaviors along the way.
Yeah, and understanding that cheap can always get cheaper and expensive can always get more expensive. But if you buy something when it's fairly priced or maybe a little underpriced, long term, you're going to look smart.
Well, and that's such a good point for now, too, Kyle, because, you know, I think we're all kind of saying to each other, well, the market kind of feels like it's at a place that makes a lot more sense. You know, if you use price earnings ratios as a barometer, yeah, we're kind of, you know, a little above average, but interest rates are still really low. This makes all kinds of sense to me. Well, it doesn't matter. That doesn't mean necessarily that we aren't going to be down a bunch more, because now, you know, all this enthusiasm of the last few years is dissipating pretty quickly, and then people pretty soon get pretty nervous and pretty scared, and things start to go the other way. So it could snap back a little too far the other way. It's kind of typically what happens, you know, but we'll settle in the right spot at some point in time and get back on track, you know.
Joel, economic data this week, anything stand out to you?
Well, yeah, a couple of things. I mean, you know, overall, the economic data show that the economy's still doing pretty well.
Why is the stock market going down then, Joel?
They're not related. They're not directly related.
I like that answer.
So I was just asked about the economics.
Brian. I'm sorry. I'm just my Friday humor. Yeah.
But the conference board, you know, has its economic leading indicators, and they're seeing from that even though it was down for the month of April, that you know, they're still seeing moderate growth in the economy. I mean, the week before that, we're hearing stuff about a possible recession, and they're saying, you know, the GDP is going to go up 2.3% this year. So
that's fascinating how strong consumer sentiment was, you know, a year ago, a year and a half ago, and like now all of a sudden everybody's getting kind of crabby.
Well, you know, that's a really fickle indicator. People turn on a dime I mean, literally, as far as how they're feeling. You know, a lot of the things that's holding back consumer sentiment now is inflation. If inflation goes down, as some people expect by the end of the year, maybe consumer sentiment will be up again. So that's something that it's. I mean, it's considered a predictor of consumer spending, which is the biggest component of GDP. But you know, people are fickle. They change their mind about stuff, and that's all survey based. So they can change their mind. Some of the other numbers this week, you know, retail sales, they're at a record high. It's been up 4 months in a row. Something that we see in that is something that we've talked about before, is that a lot of that retail spending, more of it is going toward services. Just one example is the restaurants and bars spending there went up by 2% in April. And for grocery stores and liquor stores, it went down by 0.2%. So you see that, you know, happening there. Industrial production numbers, seeing how manufacturing in particular is doing, that was up 4 months ago. That indicator was at an all-time high for the index. There's a component of that looks at capacity utilization. That's a little higher, which suggests that there might be some inflation on the way. But, you know, I think we're all kind of looking at inflation here anyway. What else did we have? We had a record number of houses under construction. Record, you know, that's going back to 1970. I think the records go back that far. And so, you know, there's still the push to build houses because there's been a shortage, and that's what's helped the house prices go up, but there's still demand out there. But now we also hear from the National Association of Realtors that sales are going down because of the prices, and because now there are higher mortgage rates too.
Yeah, and the rate piece, I think, is the one that has been a bigger factor. We've seen housing prices rising at, you know, significant pace for a while now, but all of a sudden, interest rates are the piece that make that even more difficult. And you're seeing it in the auto loan market, where, you know, loans on cars are going up, and if you can even find a car, let alone, you know, the one you want. And so I think what we're seeing is this continued transition that you pointed to in retail sales, right? That we were at roughly 69% of spending taking place in services as opposed to goods pre-pandemic. That took a huge fall back during the pandemic. And now all of a sudden, we're starting to see a resurgence in some of that service area spending. That helps alleviate some of the pressure we're seeing on the goods side. It helps alleviate some of the supply constraints. But also, I think it's a pretty healthy transition back towards areas of the market where people just hadn't been spending for a while. And so, you know, you point out that, yeah, maybe people are a little bit less optimistic than they were. Brian, you mentioned, or Joel, you mentioned people are fickle. I think, you know, they're also fickle in the areas that they're spending. And if they've been spending in one area for a while, that starts to shift. And so I think that's going to be a big piece of what kind of changes this inflation picture, is just that consumers are fickle. And they respond to changing prices, and we'll see that start to play out.
And over the long run, it makes sense. I mean, you know, if we were buying a lot of furniture and appliances and electronics, you know, during the early days of COVID, there's just so much of that you can buy, right? And people had this pent-up demand to go out to bars and restaurants and you know, movies and sporting events, and now they're able to start doing that again.
Well, and here's kind of a weird thought, but maybe a recession wouldn't be the worst thing in the world right now. You know, a modest recession that took a little bit of the lid, a little bit of the pressure off of demand, and then gave everybody a chance to kind of catch up and let some of the supply chain stuff work its way through the system and everything. You know, we have a tendency to go, oh my God, a recession. And, you know, well, let's really think of what it is. As long as people are working and getting paid, it's unlikely that things get really ugly from here. But maybe a little bit of pressure would be useful along the way.
Brian, I think you hit the critical point, and that is the employment picture, right? That recession's okay as long as you keep people working through it, as long as people keep earning money and they can come out of it somewhat intact on the other side, because it's a natural part of the business cycle. I think the risk we run is if unemployment becomes a bigger issue, and that's just not in the cards right now based on the labor issues that are out there.
Well, I'm talking about houses and cars. I mean, as long as people need houses and cars, that's a pretty big chunk of the economy too, you know? So it just seems unlikely to me that this thing could get pretty ugly from here, you know? So maybe a moderate step backward or whatever would, like I said, wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
And I think the piece I keep reminding investors is it's already gotten pretty ugly. And so if you're betting on recession, if you're betting on a bear market, we're almost there as far as how investors feel, as far as how things are being priced in. And so, and I think, yeah, there's the potential for more downside. There always is. But I think it's important to remember that we've dealt with a lot of that pain already.
Well, and this week, I mean, for me, maybe a good way for me to end anyway, but the 10-year going down to 2.8, what is that telling you? You know, that's telling you there's less concern about the long run, not more concern. So we'll see if the bond market's telling us something, you know, accurately in the months ahead. So,
well, as always, thanks for listening. We enjoy doing the program for you. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.